Bienvenidos a Crónicas de la Raza. Welcome to La Raza Chronicles. On today's program, we bring you Voices of Resistance from the Past and Present. We focus on honoring a Mapuche singer. We then bring you an interview with an herbalist supporting the health of incarcerated people and fighting against state violence in Mexico and beyond. And last but definitely not least, we bring you an interview with Rey Barberan around mission love and the documenting of struggles in the mission from the 1970s till now. We'll also bring you some important news in our calendar of upcoming events. All this and more. Stay tuned. In honor of Indigenous Peoples Day, we are rebroadcasting this interview with Mapuche singer Beatriz Pichi Malen. Reporter Lizak Shalit first produced this piece in 2015. Last week, Pichi Malen sang at a festival in Santiago, Chile, commemorating what would have been the 90th birthday of slain protest singer Victor Jara, killed 49 years ago by the Pinochet regime.
En el medio del cielo, la luna gira. La luna gira en el medio del cielo, da vueltas y desde el cielo nos mira. Mari marica el fuego no cuché, mari marica el fuego no el chazobo, mari marica el fuego no el chawenchu, fachi anto que no es un gutañim el fontati, tu fachi ni que zan ni requizuan mu, petu mongele payin, petu mongele cuifique de un gutati.
That's Mapuche songstress Beatriz Pichi Malen singing in Mapudungun at the festival Victor Jara, held last week in the very same stadium where Chilean singer-songwriter Victor Jara was killed.
Aquí está la palabra antigua. Vengo trayendo esa palabra de los Coifique Cheyenne, de nuestros antepasados. Y también traigo el saludo del Puel Mapu, de la Tierra del Este, para conmemorar este momento, esta memoria viva de 90 años, de 49 años, y también de cinco siglos.
These are the ancient words. I bring them from our ancestors. I bring greetings from Puel Mapu, the Mapuche lands east of the Andes, to commemorate this moment, to commemorate the living memory of 90 years, of 49 years, and also of 5 centuries.
Chaltumay, Chaltumay. Cuando digo Chaltumay, todo el mundo comprende, ¿verdad? Qué susto, porque a lo mejor tengo que decir thank you. Y ahí todos cachan.
Chaltumay, Chaltumay. When I say Chaltumay, everyone understands, right? Because if not, that would be alarming. Maybe I'd have to say thank you, and then you'd all catch on.
Aprendamos nuestras lenguas antiguas para tener una identidad fortificada.
Let's learn our ancient languages and strengthen our identity.
Mari mari ni pula mien, futakui fi compuane. Mari mari ni pula mien, futakui fi compuane.
Beatriz Pichi Malen makes music from, about, and for the vibrant indigenous culture in southern Chile and Argentina. Later this month, she'll be singing for rural Mapuche communities, including a special concert for children in the new cultural center in the town of Panguipulli. Then she's off to concerts in Argentina, Colombia, and Costa Rica. While the COVID lockdown kept her at home in Argentina, Pichimalen released a new album, Pichi Lufui, which you can hear on Spotify. Here's my interview with her from 2016.
Beatrice Pichimalen. Her name means little girl in Mapundungun, the language of the Mapuche people of Argentina and Chile. But there is nothing small about her voice and cultural impact. Pichimalen sings songs both powerful and playful to nature and her community, building upon Mapuche traditions to create a distinctly contemporary sound. Born and raised in the province of Buenos Aires, Argentina, Pichimalen, now in her 50s, says she was born to sing.
I think I was born to sing. I have always sung. Nothing made me happier than singing.
Pichimalen is the great-granddaughter of Coliqueo, a 19th century Mapuche lonco, or chief. She spoke Spanish and English before she sought to learn her ancestral language, Mapundungun. And although she never studied music and says she knows nothing about reading a score, Beatriz Pichimalen is hailed throughout Argentina and Chile as an interpreter of Mapuche songs. On stage, Pichimalen looms large, wearing traditional Mapuche headdresses of ribbons and silver medallions. Accompanying herself on the ralicutrun, the traditional Mapuche drum, she mixes chants that ring of rituals and songs without words to fill the auditorium with the sounds of rain or the wind.
How does the river sound? It flows. When we sing that harvest song that says kayayayay, what does it mean? Nothing. It's the sound of the fruit of the pehuen falling, like the sound of rain.
Her songs also bring alive the voices of Mapuche elders.
Gumaita pinyan mai
In concert, Pichi Malen shares the stage with her band of percussionists and synthesizers. Yet for all her musical experimentation, she never strays far from what she says is the essence of Mapuche song. It tells a story or expresses an emotion simply, without pretense.
It's beautiful. These are simple songs, uncomplicated, genuine. The music speaks for itself.
Nearly 1 million people claim Mapuche heritage. Like Pichi Malen, most do not grow up speaking its language. But Mapuche culture is not a museum piece, she says. It lives with us. It is part of Argentina and it is part of Chile. Pichi Malen calls herself a disciple of Atahualpa Yupanqui, the legendary guitarist-poet of the Argentine Pampas. And she says she's still mad at Freddie Mercury of Queen for dying so young. But when she's on stage, it's her abuelos, her elders, who Pichi Malen is listening to.
Even when I am on stage putting on a show, I could never separate myself from my Mapuche spirit. It's my own little celebration, you know.
That was an update on Mapuche singer Beatriz Pichi Malen, prepared by our San Francisco-based reporter, Lizak Shalit. You can follow Pichi Malen on Spotify and on her website. Listening to La Raza Chronicles, Crónicas de la Raza on KPFA Radio, and we are super happy and excited to have on the line from very, very far away, Nicole Rose has dedicated her life to supporting people who have been impacted by state violence, police violence, looking at the prison system and looking what we can do to support people who are inside and also what we can do to abolish prisons in general. I'm really excited to hear about your amazing project, which is The Prisoner's Herbal. It's a beautiful book that is basically an opportunity for people to learn about herbs that grow in yards and prisons and often just exist in places where people can access while they're incarcerated, still find some relief and some healing. This is a book that has now been translated and is not just translated in terms of language into Spanish, but has also been translated in terms of context and is used and will be used widely in Mexico. And we're really excited about an event that's happening at Hasta Muerte Coffee Shop here in Oakland. We all love Hasta Muerte for always resisting state violence and doing its part to support movements overall. And we're excited to hear about this amazing event where we'll get to hear about the state of what former prisoners and people who are currently incarcerated in Mexico are experiencing, and also how this book can be a support for people who are experiencing really challenging experience of this repression that goes on day in and day out. So Nicole, I feel really honored to speak to you. I mean, you really have a lifelong dedication to this work. I'd love to start there if possible. You know, this is a really beautiful way to support people that often when we think about the criminal justice system, the penal system, we just think, okay, let's change laws. Let's try to minimize sentencing. Let's try to do what we can to limit who goes into prison. But once people are incarcerated, there's not much that we do to support folks. And a lot of people are very isolated and really suffering. So talk to us about all the many pieces that have led you to this work and this work in general.
Sure. And so, yeah, I'm based in the southwest of England. And when I was 21, I got sent down for 3.5 years for my role in a campaign to close down an animal testing company here. And a lot of us faced repression and 12 of us were put in prison. And, you know, I didn't have a grandmother like teaching me about plants or anything like this. Like it was a very, you know, kind of colonized life of like, you know, more corporate logos than you do plants, right? But when I was in prison, I got a job working in the gardens, and like gardens is like maybe a fancy word for it, but it was basically just like courtyards with a bit of grass and some other plants. And the time I spent there was very life-changing in different ways. Yeah, in one way, seeing like the huge amounts of violence and racism and sexual violence and like all that horrible stuff that I won't talk about now, but also about learning about plants. So I was inside with some older women and some people from like a traveler background. And yeah, they just taught me loads about herbs in the prison gardens. And I just started experimenting. I got some money to do like a distance learning course. I don't know why I thought when I went to prison, like that would be it. Like I wouldn't be able to connect to the land. And I felt ridiculous coming into prison. And like the first thing I see is like all these dandelions like pushing up through the concrete, or birds on the fences, things like this. And yeah, it really was like the focus of my sentence was learning as much about plants as possible. But reading all these herbalism books, like it's all stuff that people make on the outside, right? Like it's not for a prison context. So I just felt really passionate about then producing a resource for people still inside about how they can work with plants, like emotionally, physically, spiritually, to help them like survive the violence of being like kept in a cage, basically. And yeah, like published it in 2019, and Jorge and Heather Ann have translated it. And yeah, I'm just like super grateful for their labor and all their work that they've done to make this edition possible. And yeah, we've had editions in English going to people in the like so-called US and across the so-called UK and Europe. Yeah, it's really exciting to know that like people in Mexico and the Spanish state and other countries can, yeah, can kind of access the book.
That's the voice of Nicole Rose. We're talking about Nicole's work through Solidarity Apothecary, which does so much, but one of the many things that you've been focused on is how do we share information on how people can connect to the land and connect to all these healing properties, seek, you know, some sort of comfort or support and healing in these things that, you know, are so essential to all of our being, which are the herbs and plants that grow all around us. So you gave the example of dandelions growing. I'd love to hear any other example that you could share of a way that you have either learned that while you were inside or outside, how you've supported people who are currently facing state repression and state violence and are incarcerated. An example of something that people have been able to take on and use it to support their health or their healing.
I mean, like, just in terms of this interview today, like, I just got back to the kind of accommodation where I'm staying in France. I'm in Calais, which is right next to the UK, like, on the northern French border, where, like, thousands of people are trying to cross to England via very dangerous routes in the sea and getting into lorries and trucks. And it's, like, one of the most dangerous crossings in Europe. And I've been coming here for 4 years now. And we do herbal medicine as part of a kind of integrative clinic with doctors and nurses and medical herbalists. But yeah, I met a man today who had a really bad cough, for example, and we gave him cough syrup with alakempane and marshmallow and elderflower. And marshmallow is like one of the herbs in the book. It was one of the herbs I found in the prison, but it was like a common mallow. And yeah, and like to just speak briefly to this plant, like this was one of the plants that I saw in prison regularly that I learned to work with. It's like really perfect for my constitution. And yeah, we use like the root as a powder to make a really kind of like sticky, gooey mucilaginous mix that we add to glycerin. And that is like a really fantastic, like soothing cough syrup, because loads of people here have like literally hundreds and hundreds of people. I've just lost count of how many hundreds of cough syrups we've given out. But yeah, so that's like one plant. Or like rose, for example, is also published in the prisoner's herbal. We had roses like in the courtyard of like the main courtyard where they like parade all the visitors around. They're kind of planting roses, like I write about it in the book, but they're planting roses to make this like violent, horrific institution look kind of pretty and like make it look kind of normal. Like I really think prisons in our society are really painted as like natural, normal and necessary. And part of the book is like highlighting how like this isn't normal. But yeah, but anyway, but we had roses in the prison gardens. And then like that's been a plant that I've worked with a lot for people with traumatic stress or like, I think I don't like using the word like post-traumatic stress, because often it's like ongoing trauma for people. It's not like a historical thing. But yeah, Rose is like fantastic support for the nervous system in kind of enabling you into this like parasympathetic, like rest and digest state, enable you to move and shift like unprocessed emotions, enabling you to feel comforted in times of grief and emotional pain. Like we use it for refugees coming from Ukraine as well, as like one of the kind of main like indigenous herbs there. I think all the books in the Prisoner's Herbal have like continued on in my journey as a herbalist and in my work in supporting people experiencing state violence.
It is actually, for me, it gives me a lot of hope. Even in these moments, you know, there are ways that we can feel connected to these very powerful plants. You mentioned also the work you're doing, working with people who are refugees. You're part of Herbalists Without Borders, which honestly, I feel I was sad to not have heard of before. Your work, the Solidarity Apothecary, Herbal Medicine as Mutual Aid. Could you tell us a little bit more about the work you're doing in solidarity with people who are refugees and who are experiencing these intense crossings, as well as just in general, a little more about the Solidarity Apothecary?
Sure. So like Herbalists Without Borders Calais is kind of one chapter of a bigger kind of global network of groups. But herbalists have been coming to Calais since like 2015. But in 2019, there was like a decision to come like more regularly as like a dedicated clinic. So we've been coming like the first week of every month. We've missed like the odd month due to funding or people getting COVID, things like this. But generally we try to do that like 1 week a month. We kind of see it as like an ecology of solidarity in different projects for people that are like providing food or medicine. We don't want to just be like a random thing. Like we want to be part of the local infrastructure. Like we try and get people into the local hospitals. Like we advocate for people, we support them to go to the local clinic. We don't want to replace that, and part of our role is really seeing like clinical red flags for people that are able to kind of receive herbal medicine, like that's appropriate for them. We have like a massive dispensary, so we have everything from cough syrup and chest rub to like an immune tonic. I make lavender oil for sleep. Lots of people have like different skin complaints, like scabies or eczema, things like this. We have different creams, and we also do like loads of wound care. Like the wounds here are horrific from police violence, from kind of secondary infections, and we use a lot of kind of antibacterial plants as powders or gels to kind of aid in that wound healing. And that's what I've been doing mostly this week, is just had my eyes up. Yeah, I've been up to my eyeballs in wound care. But yeah, if people don't know about the context here, it's kind of like border crossing. So the British government won't allow people to apply for asylum from France, for example. Like all they would need to do is stick an office in France. So instead you have to be in the UK to apply for asylum in the UK, which means you basically have to risk your own life, like crossing the channel by sea. So people are going out in like tiny boats, like many people have drowned. Like I've met families who I've treated 1 week and who've drowned the next week. I've treated people who've just come off boats, who've just come out of the sea, or people try really hard to get into trucks or lorries, but it's extremely dangerous. And, you know, as we know, it's like extremely racialized. There's a lot of racism and anti-blackness. There's a trigger warning about this stuff, but there's like horrific racism, horrific police violence. Yeah, they literally have this term, which means like hunting for humans. They're really connected to fascists here. It's like very organized fascists. I had my van smashed up by fascists. But at the same time, as much as it's like horrific like that, people are also amazing. There's a lot of organized solidarity between like migrants and asylum seekers, as well as between like people who come to the region to support. And, you know, like thousands of people managed to cross safely into the UK to apply for asylum. We do this monthly clinic. All the medicines are made with plants grown in the UK by a kind of network of grassroots growers and herbalists. It's always like a work in progress. You know, we make mistakes. We're constantly learning. It feels like we're always at the beginning of everything. But I think we're slowly developing like more systems and becoming a bit more resilient through the pandemic. A lot of the bigger medical agencies like Red Cross or Medecins du Monde like weren't able to deliver because of legal restrictions. But we were able to go. So we were one of the only healthcare teams during the pandemic. We gave out like 6,000 different medicines for like immune support and sore throats and stuff. So yeah, so that's what we do. And I come pretty much most months. I'm trying to come less and train more people to come so I don't have to. But yeah, it's definitely like one of the big focuses of my life. And then in terms of like the apothecary in England, like I do lots of like one-to-one support for people who have different emotional and physical health challenges from trauma. So maybe they've just got out of prison, they could be on trial. I send like a lot of packs to people at court who are like experiencing repression and like their parents receive them. So, you know, like I live near Bristol and we had like a massive riot last year and 20 people are in prison. So we're doing a lot of prisoner support with that, with Bristol Anarchist Black Cross. And yeah, I try and give medicine to the defendants and to their families to just kind of, it, you know, maybe it's tokenistic, but I think people really appreciate it, and especially like the families and stuff. So, and I also have this project called Ukraine Herbal Solidarity. So we wanted to respond to the invasion. Like my partner is, well, I've got two partners, but one of them is Russian and I've got friends in Ukraine, so, and Poland. So when the kind of colonial invasion happened, wanted to respond. So we've been doing like a clinic at a border spot in Poland. It's like a petrol station where people crossing the four border crossings, they converge there in buses, like on their way to Berlin or other cities like Warsaw in Poland. We have medicine for like shock and stress and sleep. And yeah, that's now run by an amazing herbalist called Lana, who is Ukrainian, and she gives out all the medicine. And basically, I literally just like post her stuff. Like we just like order thousands of pounds worth of medicine and get it to her where she is. And she's been doing that, bless her, since April. So yeah, all the things, basically, like all the different things to do with herbalism and state violence.
I'm speaking to Nicole Rose. Nicole Rose is talking about her incredible work with Herbalists Without Borders, which is Calice, which is in northern France. It's supporting people, refugees in northern France, as well as supporting people in Ukraine, as well as supporting people who are incarcerated. So my question, Nicole, is how can we support you? People are hearing this in the Bay Area. They're probably really inspired by your incredible dedication and your lifelong commitment to serving others and to addressing these systems of oppression. Can you please give us information on how people can support your work?
So obviously we've just translated the Prisoners Herbal into Spanish. And for folks in the Bay Area, the most amazing thing that could help is supporting like Heather Ann, who's doing the talk, and getting the book to loved ones in prison, fundraising. We have like thousands of requests for books. We pay for the books from the sales of the books to people on the outside, because it's a really good book for people on the outside, like to learn about herbalism. But it's just like not enough, you know, it can't compete with like Amazon or whatever. So fundraising and donations and financial support is amazing. But also like we want this book to reach people. So we already have a relationship with some like prisoner book projects and different prisoner solidarity groups. But I know there's like a million more that we're not in touch with. So if you are doing any kind of organizing like that around like incarceration or supporting prisoner families or prisoners, then like definitely get in touch with us, because we love to like develop those like grassroots networks of people that are distributing the book. And yeah, just like appreciative of donations and people sharing it on, you know, the old Instagram or the internet or whatever. Yeah. And in terms of the other work, like I guess it's all on my website and folks can donate on there, or they can order the books. And again, just like starting stuff where you are, right? Like I know there's like loads of amazing herbal projects in the Bay Area and loads of amazing herbalists like across Mexico and the so-called United States. So I think, like, I love learning from people and what they're doing. So definitely like connect with me over email, or and maybe one day I'll visit, but who knows? I'll try. They might not let me in, but I can have a go.
We'd love to have you here. So again, the information about this upcoming event, La Presentación del Libro, sí va a ser en español. It's going to be in Spanish, which is really exciting. It's called La Herbolaria de los Presos. And that's the name of the book, which is a translation of Prisoner's Herbal. And so this Edición Avayala, which is really specifically geared to supporting people who are incarcerated and in cages in in Mexico. And this is Nicole Rose's Solidarity Apothecaries in translation of this incredible book, Prisoner's Herbal. And as we mentioned, Heather Ann is one of the people who supported the translation of this book. And this awesome event at the coffee shop Hasta Muerte va a ser el sábado 22 de octubre. It'll be the 22nd of October at 8 p.m. a las 8 de la noche, which actually is the Día Nacional contra la Brutalidad Policiaca, which is the National Day Against Police Brutality. So it's a very fitting day. So Hasta Muerte Coffee is in Oakland, 2701 Fruitvale Avenue. And just know that this event will be in Spanish. And this is an important event where you can purchase this amazing book, which is honestly kind of hard to get your hands on unless you go to this event. So try to go. I definitely am like, oh, I have to change my plans around and make it because I want to be able to purchase some copies and or just and just donate directly. Nicole Rose is on this call. Heather Ann, who did the interpretation, the many people, Jorge, all the people that were involved, no one is making a single money off of this at all. They're literally just trying to pay for distribution and getting this out there. So this is 100% a work of solidarity to support people who are incarcerated and support people to address the many ways that we experience state violence. So this La Herbolaria de los Presos is an amazing book that you can get your hands on if you go to this event. And I do recommend people going to your website, Solidarity Apothecary. If you Google that, solidarityapothecary.org, and just you can look up Nicole Rose in conjunction with that, you can find an incredible resource with all the information about the work you're doing in Ukraine, the work you're doing on the border, the work you're doing with this book, resources, courses, and more information, and a lot more.
I just honestly just want to say, like, thank you so much to Heather. They've just, like, smashed it. You know, we're both kind of, like, very busy, overwhelmed femmes who are just, like, doing everything for everyone all the time. And it's just, yeah, it's like you said, like, no one's getting paid from this. Like, it's all from a kind of place of, like, care and solidarity. And on my website, I've also got, like, testimonials from prisoners, like, around the world. So if you want to have a little cry, like, reading their stories of connecting with plants, you can see that it's, for me, like, this project is like, oh god, I'm like packing books again. But then, yeah, you get that letter back from someone in prison and it's like every single one makes me cry, because, you know, I've been there and I know what it's like to feel like, you know, lots of people in prison are suicidal or, you know, struggling, and the difference between not doing that and staying alive sometimes can be as small as a plant, you know, that you see in the courtyard. So, but I just want to say, like, a massive thank you to her for, like, yeah, it's just been like unrelenting work. So if you see her at the event, please bring her some herbs and, like, you give her chocolate, like, just, yeah, give her a massive hug and thank you from me, because, yeah, I'm just, like, so, so grateful that people care about the book and want to translate it.
So Nicole Rose, thank you for your deep commitment, and thank you for all the work you're doing. So it's really incredible. It's very massive, and you're not alone in this, and we're here with you, and we deeply appreciate your commitment. So muchísimas gracias, and we look forward to learning more about your book in Spanish on the 22nd of October at Hasta Muerte Coffee Shop, which will be a beautiful event where people get to come together. La Raza Chronicles. I am very, very lucky to have on the line with me Ray Valverán, and we are talking about his incredible body of work. Ray is someone who has documented social movements, arts and culture, struggle, and life in the Mission District and beyond. And I was first exposed to your incredible body of work through clips that a friend was sharing, and was sharing such an important window into social movements that I'd never seen before. What motivated you to start encouraging people, training people, and you yourself dedicating yourself to documenting these important movements?
My life and my getting involved in the films, I have to really thank the people in the community, like Ray Rivera and Rita, who put together the concept that we should have a training program that does have airspace, and the community should have its own filmmakers. Because, like we say, no one can really tell your story but your own self and your own community. And back then, sort of like it as it is now, they never got the story right what the Mission District was like. In the beginning, in those days in the 70s, there was explosions of people wanted their own media. K-Pool Radio, you know, Poor People's Radio was established. We had Instituto, our first outpatient La Raza clinic. RAP started its own community-based school for all the young people that was kicked out of regular school. We put them in our school because we, you know, we took care of them. We know they had issues. We took care of them. For me to get the opportunity and to get trained in filmmaking, I took it seriously. Work, because the community was moving moving in the direction of making social change. I mean, the San Francisco State strike, you know, created Black studies, La Raza studies, Asian studies. So that's where we were, and I became into that. Before, I wasn't into that. I was a blue-collar worker working on tugboats and ships, and I was in the service. So, I mean, getting trained in Mission Media Arts, I also got my head open to the social change movement and the people all around me in the community affected our lives. And I claim myself to be a mission filmmaker, dedicated myself to document the people in the mission and their hopes, aspirations, struggles, crises. And given all that, we wanted to get the resources of KQED and the airways to create the program to exercise our freedom of speech, to communicate to the Bay Area and communicate to our own people how beautiful they are and how powerful they are. And at one time, we did document MCO, Mission Coalition Organizations, and the Mission Coalition Organization stopped redevelopment from coming in our community and destroying the soul of our community like they did in the Fillmore. Completely destroyed them. And, you know, I'd like to thank Dick Moore, the manager of KQED. He supported this idea, the concept of community-based mission television training program in their station and use their resources. And he bought into it. Our young people who went into the broadcast part of our program became directors and producers. Not some of them was not even out of high school, but they were able to have the consciousness and the love for their community to be challenged to direct the television's resources. You know, the engineers, the profession program people, to take them to Delano, to take them to the communities, and then direct them how to edit the program, how they felt that should be representative. You know, it would be respectful to the community. And they did that with some great shows about Cesar Chavez and the farm workers movement. And what we did with some radical filmmakers was learn how to make 60 millimeter films. And our part of the struggle was to make films in KQED for PBS. So it was wonderful at that time. They had the opportunity. We're making films for national television. And KQED and a lot of public television programs was funded by the federal government. So they had a lot of funds. And the federal government and the politics at the time thought it was a good idea that people have access to these resources until Nixon came into power, until he's resistant to stop the war and his racism against access by people of color, and he started cutting people of color out of the public access, cutting the budgets of public community base. KQED was so paranoid with Nixon, they censored one of the films you're going to see at the Bravo Theater on the 22nd of October. They censored that because they was afraid. Check this out. They was afraid Nixon was going to take away their funding for the station. KQED censored the videos, 2 half-hour video programs about this farm workers' struggle and Cesar Chavez. Back in the day, no matter what, they were liberal, but they had pressure from the agriculture barons, landowners, nothing except the farm workers, and don't even put them on the air. Mission Media Arts young people went to the engineers of the station because they hold the FCC license to engineers. And we had the series, Farm Workers series, in our arms. And it was our production. It was a woman production that took KQED to the farms and brought back the films and edited them. They were ready to go, but the station censored it. And my cousin, the producer of the program, Rita, asked the engineers, are you a union man? He says, yes, we're union. And she says, this is for the farm workers union. And he caved in. He found his heart. He said, yes, they're our brothers. We're going to put it on the air. Forget the administration. We control this. And they put it on the air. But at the same time, we had a lot of heart to go in there and learn everything and take it and say, we could direct this station's resources to help our people. And that's what we start doing. You know, it's part of, you know, organizing. It's part of a culture. If you look at organizing is a culture. And it's part of that will of the community to struggle against injustice. We had a lot of help from Deborah and her program. You two had over 300 films I made. I retired from the Real Alternatives program that I love and miss today to work with the families and the youth.
That's the voice of Ray Valverde. We're talking about his incredible body of work where he has dedicated his life along with other folks as part of a team documenting the mission and beyond and really documenting struggle and how we're working to make this a more just world. So, Ray, you've talked about some of the many issues that you all focused on. You focused on farm worker struggles. You focused around state violence. You focused on poetry and arts. If someone is listening to this and they have no sense of what did the mission sound like? What did it look like? What did it feel like in the 70s? What are some things that you would share with them that maybe they'd be able to experience if they attend this event at the Brava Theater on the 22nd?
What the mission looked like and sound like, we... In the mission, especially in arts and culture movement, because filmmakers is arts and culture, we had no fear. We had a righteous cause. So people in the mission was not going to compromise. It was a great time, a lot of parties. And a lot of people we start to work with was people that wanted to end the war. Change the system at General Hospital to have more people of color, like more doctors. And we wanted to change the school, for the school could represent on the walls in the schools in those days, you're going to see Abraham Lincoln. Nowadays, you go to school, you're going to see Malcolm X, Cesar Chavez on the wall. We wanted to change the consciousness of the people and get these people off our neck. So we wanted to be free, and we wasn't scared. We wasn't scared to go and do this work. At times, some filmmakers would say, Ray, we want to take you to Marin to film people living on houseboats. And I refused that. I said, I don't have no interest in folks. I don't want to be trained on that. It takes me away from what's a priority is how are people living in the community where I live? And what do they think is needed to be on TV? One of the issues was really police violence. And I made a collection of films about police violence. Go all the way back to the I Hotel. I don't know, maybe you was a baby. No, you wasn't even a baby. The I Hotel was fighting to save that for the Filipino, the older Filipino community, 71 or 72. From there, we went to those documenting that struggle all the way to 2021, where the mission is being has been gentrified and 8,000 people has been displaced by gentrification. And just this community, we're not talking about the Fillmore and other places. So people have won some battles. We were there to document it, to show the struggle to win some of these battles. You know, and some of them was large and some of them was very small. But you can see the heart of the people talking about how people are living and how they got displaced. You know, and some people cried because they want to be in a community they've been in most of their lives. And they want to work in the community because we established nonprofits in health and education. And they wanted to work in the community they were raised in. So I'm glad I had the opportunity to do this.
I'm speaking to Ray Valverán. He has been actively documenting some incredible movements and also incredible stories of the people who've lived in the mission, who've loved the mission, and the people who've worked for a more just world. So he's been committed to this. And so we're going to talk now about this event called Mission Love, celebrating the films that Ray have created and also Mission Media Arts. So I also have on the line with me Deborah Koffler, who has been a part of this process as well. So Deborah, it'd be great for people to know what are they in store for when they come to this event? Give them all the event details and tell them about what it's all about.
Hi, so thank you so much for having us, Julieta. Just to introduce the event, the most important thing is that Ray Valverán is known as an activist, a lifelong community advocate in the mission for his work with young people and creating peace on the streets. And not everybody knows about Ray's history as a lifelong filmmaker. And so we're here at the Mission Love event to celebrate Ray Valverán as a filmmaker. And of course, you know, his life integrated as a human rights activist, but how that manifests in his filmmaking for over five decades. And Ray, through the Mission Media Arts Archive, has been able to be the steward and custodian of a large collection of the Mission District history through his guardianship of these precious gems of history, from the films, the 16 millimeter films, to half inch tapes, and then, like he mentioned, even coming into the digital era and documenting life on the streets in the Mission today. So at Mission Love, we're really going to celebrate several of Ray's, I would say, trademark films, Back on the Streets, The Family, and a documentary footage from the Mission Coalition Organization's protest to have diversity in the media and artistic control by young people in the Mission District. So we're really excited about that. It takes place at the Brava Theater on October 22nd. And we're going to have all kinds of people from the community come out. We expect it to be somewhat of a reunion. And Ray Valverán is a lifelong San Francisco community worker, has so many different people in his, you know, in his life, from the arts, from community work. And so we're really excited for everybody to come out. We're going to have Aztec dancers that will be opening the event with the ceremony in honor of Ray. And then we'll have a moderated discussion with Ray afterwards so people can ask questions and hear from him himself. And it takes place at the community-based Mission District Brava Theater, which we love and support for many years.
That's the voice of Deborah Koffler. She is supporting with this event, but most importantly, she's also the executive director of the Conscious Youth Media Crew, which follows in these steps that Ray Valverán has been so important in finding ways that we train and tell our own stories. We train people to really take it upon themselves to identify what they think is important, what change they want to see, document injustices, document the beauty, document it all. So we're so looking forward to this event. There will be three films, as you mentioned. There's going to be opportunities for people to actually talk and share with Ray and learn from him.
We're really excited that these are the first films that we'll be sharing live in a large screen from the Mission Media Arts Archive. And, you know, this archive has been rarely seen by the public other than what Ray has uploaded to YouTube. And I also wanted to give thanks to the Mission Media Arts Archive Collective members, Vero Mahano, who is also a filmmaker, and Ginger Godinez, also a filmmaker. And both of these women have been very instrumental in creating the archive and ensuring its longevity and organizing the materials. And I also want to thank Anna Montano, who is an original member of the Mission Film Workshop, who was trained by Ray Balbaran and went on to film with the Mujeres de Aslan and mural. She has a beautiful collection of mural footage, which Ray mentioned previously. And she's also helped us organize and add metadata to our database. And as far as like screening the films and getting more details and information. And so I just wanted to make sure that we honor and celebrate the involvement and what these people have added to this incredible archive. Okay, so the event is called Mission Love, Celebrating the Films of Ray Balbaran and Mission Media Arts. And it is taking place on October 22nd, Saturday, at the Brava Theater in our very own Mission District. And you can get tickets by going to the www.brava.org and look for the Mission Love event, and you can purchase tickets online. And you might also be able to get tickets at the door, but I would get them in advance. And we look forward to seeing you there. The doors will open at 5:30. The dancers will start at 6:30, and we will begin the films at 6:45.
So, muchísimas gracias. Estoy aquí con Ray Balbaran. We've been speaking to Deborah Koffler. They've been a team putting together this incredible event. It's a time for us to honor and love the mission and get to see images and videos you won't see anywhere else. So, muchísimas gracias. Thank you both for your time. And we look forward to the 22nd. All the best. Thank you all. This is Crónicas de las Razas calendar of upcoming events. We're going to do a spot with filmmaker, co-founder of Offsides Production, and all-around internationally loved creative, Iván Iturriaga. He is here on the line with us. He's going to tell us about a couple important opportunities that you have to access some exciting films, and one of them is a limited time offer. Let's start there, Iván. Tell us about what people can check out.
Hi, Julieta. Thanks for having me. I wanted to invite people to the Mill Valley Film Festival that's happening right now on both sides of the bay, both in Mill Valley and the East Bay. And I'm premiering a feature documentary called Fantastic Negrito, Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? Obviously featuring a Fantastic Negrito, a local Oakland blues man, and his crazy life story. And that's happening on Saturday the 15th at 7 p.m. at the Pacific Film Archive, and at the Lark Theater in Mill Valley on the 16th. That would be Sunday. And you can buy tickets at the Mill Valley Film Festival website.
And tell us a little bit more about the film for people who aren't familiar with Fantastic Negrito.
So Fantastic Negrito was born in Massachusetts, believe it or not, in 1968. And then when he moved to Oakland as a teenager, he had this extreme culture shock when the town just hit him in the face of everything that it brings. And from there starts his journey to try and find and discover who he truly is. So he goes through several different identities as an artist. He moves to LA, has a $1 million record deal that actually eventually fails. He defeats death twice in his life and eventually finds his true self, finds this persona called Fantastic Negrito after he's been through tons of trials and tribulations. And that's his like personal story that's part of the film, but ultimately, as the film is called, Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? It is a kind of a journey to figure out how do we stay sane in this sick society that we live in with all its pressures to file into like materialism, gun violence, addiction, all these things that can plague a lot of people. So ultimately, it's kind of a testament to the value of friendship and community to keep us healthy in today's age.
Iván Iturriaga, director and filmmaker, you're talking to us about your upcoming premiere, but also this storyline connects to another alert to what's wrong with our world and what we can do to make it better. Can you tell us about the series that you are dropping or that people can access online?
For sure. With Offsides Productions, we created a mini series of shorts. It's an anthology series, which means each short is different. And the series is called Normal Ain't Normal. And we came up with this series as, you know, we were in that period of the pandemic when everybody was talking about going back to normal and everything needs to go back to normal. And we really felt that that normal that we were living previously wasn't really something we wanted to go back to. And so each short explores a working class character confronting this shift and in their workplace and in the society we're living in. So I invite everybody to check them out. We're releasing them every Tuesday. We've released two already, and it's a total of four. And you can find them. We've made a partnership with BuzzFeed. So on BuzzFeed's YouTube page, you can find each short and check out the two next ones that are coming out.
And how do people stay up on your work?
Go to offsizeproductions.org, and you can find all the work we've done and work that's coming up.
Iván, always a pleasure to speak with you. Felicitaciones on all your successes.
Gracias, Julieta. And please, everybody, check out these films. Well, we need the community support for sure.
We have other exciting events that we want people to know about is Presida Eyes Murals will be having a gala. This is a really exciting 45th anniversary gala on Saturday, October 15th, starting at 6 p.m. at the Gray Area Theater, which is 2665 Mission Street in San Francisco. It's an amazing opportunity for people to support Presida Eyes, which is responsible for so many beautiful murals, and also get to mingle with some incredible artists. So if you can't attend, you can still support Presida Eyes' 45th anniversary. Find out more on their website. We also want to announce the San Francisco Bach Choir, Tesoros Dorados, a concert that takes place Sunday, October 16th at 4 p.m. at the Calvary Presbyterian Church, which is 2515 Fillmore at Jackson in San Francisco. Tickets are online at SF Bach Choir's website. So don't miss all these incredible events. And we thank you all for listening. If you'd like to get involved with our program or offer us any shows or people we should be covering, reach out to us at larazachronicles@kpfa.org. You can also follow us on SoundCloud as well as Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. Muchísimas gracias y buenas noches.